Sam Reyes here. Just recently I've been looking around at the news and noticed that Apple's got a lot of new cool stuff out, so I decided to put up a show pretty early in the week. Alright, so to start off, go check out the website. There's going to be a lot of stuff there, applenet.podbean.com. Yeah, check it out there. Alright, so straight to news. To start off, I've been looking a lot at the web, and I've noticed a lot of weird stuff going on. Looks like Apple's setting a trend for their new Apple stores that are coming out soon. Seems like finally they got stuck on a design, and it seems to be the glass-encased building, such as the one in New York that's already built in Times Square. Not on Fifth Avenue, I'm sorry, not in Times Square. They've also got one that's going to be built in Melbourne, Australia. I believe Australia, hold on. I think it's in Australia. And then there's also one in Boston that's going to be coming in. Hopefully they won't put any lights that may look like a bomb, because, you know, Boston isn't that great for bomb scares, especially when it comes to Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Yes, it's in Melbourne, Australia, and there's one, I think, going to be in Boston, which is going to be a little weird, glass encased. So just recently, a lot of people have been saying that the digital rights management, or DRM system, that Apple has to protect its music against theft is basically, people want it to be released. They don't want it anymore. They kind of want it to just go away, basically. So Steve Jobs wrote a, technically it's like a blog post almost. It's called Thoughts on Music. You can access it through the homepage of apple.com. And I'm going to kind of read a couple of paragraphs here. It was written on February 6th, which was about a week ago. With the stunning global success of Apple's iPod music player and iTunes online music store, some have called for Apple to open the digital rights management system that Apple uses to protect its music against theft, so that music purchased from iTunes can be played on digital devices purchased from other companies, and protected music purchased from other online music stores can play on iPods. Let's examine the current situation and how we got here, and look at three possible alternatives for the future. So, to begin, it is useful to remember that all iPod music to play, that all iPods play free music of any DRM and encoded in open licensable formats such as MP3 and AAC. iPod users can and do acquire their music from many sources, including CDs they own, music on CDs that can be easily imported into freely downloadable iTunes jukebox software, which runs on both Macs and Windows PCs, and is automatically encoded into the open AAC or MP3 formats without any DRM. This music can be played on iPods or any other music players that play these formats. The rub comes from the music Apple sells on its iTunes music store. Since Apple does not own or control any of the music itself, it must license the rights to distribute music from other companies, primarily the big four music companies: Universal, Sony BMG, Warner, and EMI. These four companies control the distribution of over 70% of the world's music. When Apple approaches these companies to license their music to distribute legally over the internet, they were extremely cautious and required Apple to protect their music from being illegally copied. The solution was to create a DRM system, which envelopes each song purchased from the iTunes Music Store in special and secret software so that it cannot be played on unauthorized devices. Apple was able to negotiate landmark usage rights at the time, which included users to play their DRM-protected music on up to 5 computers and on an unlimited number of iPods. Obtaining such rights from music companies was unprecedented at the time, and even today is unmatched by most other digital music services. However, a key provision of our agreements with the music companies is that if our DRM system is compromised, their music becomes playable on unauthorized devices. We only have a small number of weeks to fix the problem, or they withdraw their entire music catalog from the iTunes Music Store. To prevent illegal copies, DRM systems must allow only authorized devices to play. They protect the music. If a copy of a DRM protected song is posted onto the internet, it should not be able to play on a downloader's computer or portable music device. To achieve this, a DRM system employs secrets. There is no theory of protecting content other than keeping secrets. In other words, if even one uses the most sophisticated cryptographic locks to protect the actual music, one must still hide the keys which unlock the music on the user's computer or portable music player. No one has ever implemented a DRM system that does not depend on such secrets for its operation. The problem, of course, is that many people are smart in the world, some with a lot of time on their hands, who would love to discover such secrets and publish a way for everyone to get free and stolen music. And they are often successful in doing just that. So any company trying to protect its content using a DRM must frequently update it with a new and harder discover secrets. It's like it's a cat and mouse game, basically. Apple's DRM system is called FairPlay. While we have few breaches in FairPlay, we have been able to successfully repair them through updating the iTunes Store software. Now, before I continue on, I want you guys to know, to find where they talk about FairPlay, I didn't know this originally, but FairPlay is on all your iPods. And what happens is when you click on settings on your iPod on the front menu, you can go and check on licensing. It's licensing, and then you can scroll down and you'll see FairPlay's logo. It has like a weird looking logo. You can look at that when you have time with your iPod. We have been the iTunes Store, the iTunes jukebox software, and software in the iPods themselves. So basically, that's what I just said. It's on FairPlay is on both iTunes. And it's on in the iPods. So far, we have met our commitments to the music companies to protect their music, and we have given users the most liberal usage rights available in the industry for legally downloaded music. With this background, let's explore the three different alternatives. The first alternative is to continue on the current course, with each manufacturer competing freely with their own top-to-bottom proprietary systems for selling, playing, and protecting music. It is a very competitive market with major global companies making large investments to develop new music players and online music stores. Apple, Microsoft, and Sony all compete with proprietary systems. Music purchased from Microsoft's Zune store will only play on Zune players. Music purchased from Sony's Kinect store will only play on Sony's players. And Apple's iTunes will play on iPods. Same thing. This is the current state of affairs in the industry, and customers are being well served and continuing to stream of innovative products, and of a wide variety of choices. Some have argued that once a consumer purchases a body of music from one of the proprietary music stores, they are forever locked into using the music players from that one company. Or if they buy a specific player, they are locked into buying music from only that company's store. Is this true? Let's look at the data for our iPods and the iTunes Music Store. They are the industry's most popular product, and we have accurate data for them. Through the end of 2006, customers purchased a total of 9 million iPods and 2 billion songs from the iTunes Music Store. On an average, that's 22 songs purchased from the iTunes Store for each iPod ever sold. Today's most popular iPod holds 1,000 songs, which is the iPod Nano and formerly called the iPod Mini. And research tells us that the average iPod is nearly full. This means that only 22 out of 1,000 songs, or under 3% of the music on the average iPod, is purchased from the iTunes Music Store and is protected with a DRM. The remaining 90% of the music is unprotected and playable on any player, so that can open the open formats. It's hard to believe that just 3% of the music on the average iPod is enough to lock users into buying only iPods in the future. And since 97% of the music on average iPod was not purchased from the music store, iPod users are clearly not locked into the iTunes store to acquire their music. Now, this sounds a little shaky. I mean, on my iPod, I think I'd say about 70 or 80% of my stuff on my iPod video is from the iTunes Music Store, including all the podcasts, which, well, technically aren't bought, and definitely all of my music and movies were, except for one which I got on, like, some random service that I had. I can't remember what it was called, though, but there's, like, was one. So, 70% of my iTunes stuff. This sounds like a really big average of people we've never heard of. Like good old Uncle Bill, who has so many CDs of the Beatles, he could cry and he'd be dripping out records of the Beatles. I mean, I really don't know if this is totally legitimate. It sounds true, but I don't know. So let me continue. The second alternative is for Apple to license its FairPlay DRM technology to current and future competitors, with the goal of achieving interoperability between different companies, players, and music stores. On the surface, this seems like a good idea, since it might offer customers increased choice now and in the future. And Apple might benefit by charging a small licensing fee for its FairPlay DRM. However, we look a bit deeper, and problems seem to emerge. The most serious problem is that licensing DRM involves disclosing some of its secrets to many people in many companies. And history tells us that inevitably these secrets will leak. Hey guys, let's just remember way back in 1984 with the Macintosh and Windows. I wonder why. FairPlay might be a good thing to keep with Apple. I don't know. He's trying to focus. I think this is kind of like a way of him to get it back to Apple. What I have to say to this is you're not totally locked, but if you have a credit card, and well, unless you're a kid, if you have a credit card and you're buying from the iTunes Music Store, you're having fun. It's the most reliable music store. They have a lot of cool stuff that you've never heard of that no one ever knows about except for a very select people that have nothing to do with it. So basically I say that this is kind of cool. Let me go to the last alternative. The third alternative is to abolish DRMs entirely. That's just weird. Basically, it's either compromise and give the people, everybody gets DRM, Apple and these other big companies get DRM, or no one gets DRM. So, whatever you think, he doesn't come to a big conclusion. I think he's, hold on, let me read the last paragraph. Much of the concern over DRM system has arisen in European countries. All of MP3, Russian. That's a great company. That's pretty cool. It's legal because you're buying it in Europe. The thing is that the internet may seem like a philosophical idea, but it's not. It's really actually a physical thing. You're actually buying music in Russia on a server that is located in Russia. So, I mean, basically it goes over who the stores are and how many, like, the percentage of people who own it, like, countries. So, that's kind of a cool story, thoughts on music. Check it out, apple.com/hotnews/thoughts on music. Alrighty, next story is straight from the Mercury News. Biting words on Apple come back to haunt Dell. Back in 1997, when we had the Microsoft deal for Apple, and this is where Microsoft Word and Excel, this is where the whole Microsoft Office suite and Internet Explorer came into play. When Microsoft bought shitloads of Apple stock. So here's what he's got. Michael Dell offered some harsh advice a decade ago to how to fix struggling Apple computer. Words that now provide ironic sting for the newly minted CEO of his own slumping company. What would I do? I'd shut them down and give them the money back to the shareholders, he said at a technology conference in the fall of 1997. Of course, Apple's investors and chief executive Steve Jobs haven't gotten the last laugh. Back then, Jobs had just returned to lead the company he had founded, beginning what would become an exceptional transformation. Dell, on the other hand, has watched its business go the other way. Michael Dell has been recalled to helm to get it back on track. I have to say, this is kind of weird because if you think about it, let's not talk stocks, let's talk about real product. Dell's selling pretty good stuff. I'd have to say, in the PC industry, more than likely, HP is leading the way, and then it probably hits Dell next. Like, those are the two big companies that are there right now. And then probably Toshiba, IBM, oh god, they're idiots. They sold their one product that they had going for them, the ThinkPad, to Lenovo or China Inc. or somebody. That was stupid. So let me continue the story. Basically, when founders give up operational control of companies, they often leave on a positive note. They've watched their baby flourish, and it becomes time for someone with fresh ideas or skills to lead. But when those same founders retake the helm, warning bells often ring. The return to executive suite generally means that the company is desperate. Really, here's what the problem was for Steve Jobs. I'm going to kind of go over what happened. Basically, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak founded Apple Computers on April 1st, 1976. On my birthday, April 1st. So, 1976, April 1st, they founded Apple Computers. And then they built the Apple One, which was the first computer they ever built, which was the only one that had wood encasing. And then they built the Apple II, which was a humongous success. And was not wood encasing, it was polycarbonate, I believe. So, now we're kind of getting into the real story of Apple and how it went down. So, the Apple II got Apple to become a corporation, finally. Like, they got a high enough standard to become a publicly traded corporation. So then they started building, like, a big corporate office. And the Apple III came out, which was, like, a pretty big failure because it wasn't anything close to the Apple II, because the Apple II was so revolutionary, and the Apple III was like, oh, okay, Apple III, whatever, okay. Not too many people own the Apple II more than they did the Apple III. Not too many people own the Apple III more than they did the Apple II. So now we're going to the next computer that they built, the Lisa. So the Lisa was supposed to be a humongous success. Why? Because Xerox and their Palo Alto Research Center had developed something called graphic user interface for a operating system called Xerox Star. What happened was, is they developed a whole computer. But when those developers went to New York to go talk with those executives, what did the executives think? Well, to start off, who would consider something called a mouse? I mean, the executives thought they just dumped a dead rat on the boardroom table. And they weren't really getting the whole idea of having a computer. I mean, paper and pen was way better than a computer. Computer would take too long to learn. That's basically the excuse for any company to use a computer. HP, when Steve Wozniak had to take the Apple One to HP, because it was under his contract that anything he developed had to go to HP's head. And the HP head was like, what would we want to do with a computer? It takes too long to learn. They said that when teachers got a laptop, every teacher, at least in a few school districts here in California, got laptops. They're like, oh, don't give them a laptop. They'll never figure it out. It's too confusing. They'll never learn how to use a computer. Now people are using online grades to show their students how they did on tests and on their overall grade. So to continue on, you know, the Xerox said, oh, well, that's stupid. We're not going to consider it at all. So Steve Jobs figures out that this is something big. And he goes and asks, well, can we have it? Can we look at it? And he said, sure. And so the developers were like, oh, crap, you got to be joking me. You know, no, don't give it to Steve Jobs. He's Apple. He's a big company. They want it, so then they can use it, and they can make more money than we can. Well, I said, no, we're not going to use it, so let him have it. So they let him have it, and they let him, you know, look at it, and they finally just, in the end, it was like they were pillaging, they were like pirates pillaging some village. So they got the stuff, they got Xerox Star, they created OS, Lisa OS, which was their computer. And Lisa was actually, there's a whole story to Steve Jobs' daughter, Lisa, but it's basically a backronym, which was called Local Integrated Software Architecture. But that was the backronym, which means that was its nickname. It was its, like, real name after they came out with it. It was just called Lisa because it was his daughter. It was just a name he came with. We haven't figured out where Lisa, the name, came from, but that's what it was. Lisa didn't succeed, and we're not sure really why. It should have succeeded pretty fairly well. Now, this is where Steve Jobs gets really shady. He hires John Sculley from from PepsiCo, and basically it's in like this one little sentence that changes his whole look on things. Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life, or do you want to make history? Basically, that was the quote. And so John Sculley came to Apple and became their CEO. Now Steve Jobs was a nobody, because at that time, basically, he was a CEO. The founder was a CEO. Steve Wozniak didn't want to be really high up in the hierarchy. I mean, he was a higher class employee. I'm not sure really what he was during that time. I'm not totally sure. I don't want to go into detail. So Steve Jobs gets kicked off the Lisa crew because he's now an official employee, no longer an executive. So now he goes and forms the Macintosh group. Seriously, guys, if you think that like the civil rights movement with the slaves was bad, which seriously it was, these guys were like 20 more hours more than the slaves ever did. Like, this was corporal punishment. Like, it was bad to design the Macintosh. Now, I'm not gonna lie, the Macintosh did succeed, but it kinda didn't. It was like right in that middle of success and failure, and here's why. Well, the Macintosh, what happened was, is that Microsoft was a building company. Like, it built tremendous. Like, it was the Apple computer. Like, it was the size of Apple computer when they finally were an incorporation. It was, like, the size of Apple computer when they finally were considered a corporation, publicly traded corporation. So that's the size that they were before, at this time. So that they're, like, Apple Computers Corporation size. That's the size that they are right now. Right around 1983, 1984. So they come to Steve Jobs and they want to look at the Macintosh, because they want to know what's going on. Now, Steve Jobs has always had this idea that IBM was the enemy, because IBM is so big. But now, Apple's like the real enemy to everybody else, including IBM. So I'm not going to go into Windows stuff because I don't like Windows. Well, I don't like Windows, but I use Windows. So now, like Bill Gates, Paul Allen, who else? Steve Ballmer. These guys are coming over, and they're wanting to talk to him. And basically, they put a lot of Microsoft stuff into the Macintosh. So what does Steve Jobs do? They sign like this contract, and they give him 4 Macintosh prototypes running Mac OS. What do you think they're going to do? Look what happened to you and Xerox. You guys basically got Xerox's OS, and now you're going to give it to some dinky little company called Microsoft? What do you think Xerox was doing to you? Ding! No sparks went into Steve Jobs' head until the unveilment of the whole Microsoft and the Macintosh unveilment with the showing of the 1984 ad. So now they're finished with the whole unveilment of the Macintosh and the commercial ad unveiling. Now they're talking. They find all these Japanese NEC computers running Windows, and basically it's pirated software. It's the exact same thing as Mac OS. Now Steve's pissed off. Well, basically, who's gonna buy? I mean, Apple, people weren't buying Apple because of the price. The price was too expensive. A lot of these PCs were way cheaper than Apple was, but the quality, way off. Windows was a way worse operating system. Well, at least the first Windows was a good operating system. The reason why was, it was Mac OS. The same thing. So, Windows, you're basically going up against yourself. And all that matters in the end is price with people. People are out to save money. And who's got the cheaper price? Windows. So Windows making the money. And now John Sculley's up to his head saying, oh my god, what happened? We are losing money now. So right around Steve's birthday, things pass. 2 months after Steve's birthday, he's gone. He was fired by John Sculley. 1984. 13 years pass, and now it's 1997. Apple's been in a humongous slump and has been losing money. So now we're stuck with the Microsoft deal. This was in 1997 Macworld in Boston, and this is where they unveiled the Microsoft deal. And at this time, this is where Michael Dell says it out loud. They go and talk to him. They say, "What do you have to think about this?" And he says that quote. I really don't know what Michael Dell was thinking, but that's a big enough quote, and it's him, and Dell has grown and supposedly fallen so much that they're all of a sudden it's a really bad source. One last thing I want to tell you guys, it has absolutely nothing to do with Dell or Apple. Well, it does have something to do with Apple. But what's going to happen is recently, I've been reading that from Prudential's analyst Jesse Tortora, the newest iPod that's going to be available, who knows when, the next generation or newest design, supposedly they scratched the old one due to a hard disk. They're going to step away from the hard disk and go to flash drive, which is pretty cool. I mean, yeah, flash drive, not my thing, but so that's the kind of the big thing, and so it's probably going to delay a lot of the stuff that's going to happen with the iPods. It looks like the next iPod is going to be delayed a while. So it looks like the iPhone, I'm wondering, is the iPhone going to replace the iPod? Because I want to see if they're going to have an iPod. I want an iPod only. I don't want an iPhone. It's too big. Too big, too much stuff to worry about. And I don't like smartphones to start off with. I had the Motorola Q. I hated that thing. And it's not the buttons, and it's a communicator. I got it as a gift with a singular thing. I didn't like it. It was just, I don't like smartphones. They're too big. So that's kind of big news. Oh, and also we just found out, I just got another source, that it looks like the New York crossing the street with the iPod ban thing. It looks like that's getting it. The guy is getting more and more heavy hitting with that. He really is not happy. He really wants to. He's really looking like he's probably. It seriously is sounding really funny. It's really funny, but it's really sad at the same time. With when you have like when you're seriously serious about an idiot legislation. I mean, it's so so bad. I swear I want to kill this guy, but I can't find the stock price. Probably went down, more than likely. Guys, I thank you so much for listening to AppleNet, your weekly source of Apple information. Check out the website applenet.podbean.com, or you can email me with any cool stuff that you want to talk about. If you find a cool story that I've never mentioned before and maybe you think it would be cool to add on, maybe I will see it. You can email me at samriss@applenetmail@yahoo.com. Thank you very much. See you guys next week. Bye-bye.